we're just talking about Halloween candy, and you say you get certain candy, and you're like, nah, I want less.
Yeah, less. Exactly. Yeah, more
absolutely.
Is less.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good morning. Happy Halloween to you all. Thank you very much for joining us on the panel this morning. We have an incredible panel before us. Let me introduce them to you. WAMC's newsman Ray Graff joins us. How's that weather forecast going?
It's windy.
Right? Yeah,
windy. Everyone knows it's windy.
Former Daily Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld is here, fresh from the Media Project.
Good morning. Very nice to see you all again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. All right. Let us begin with the topic. I don't know. So a lot of these topics are topics that we've been talking a lot about, but let's talk about more because there's always new stuff. And that is about the healthcare law, and the White House is again trying to get out, I guess not in front of this, but are trying to do as much damage control as they possibly can. The president spoke in Boston at Faneuil Hall. Oddly enough, or maybe not so oddly enough, where Mitt Romney signed the Massachusetts plan into law. The president took full responsibility for a malfunctioning healthcare website and made the point that they had problems in Massachusetts when this whole thing got off the ground, and you should expect problems when something this massive gets started. Meanwhile, it sounds like people are just standing in line to take blame at this point.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, no, it's my fault. No, mine.
Yes. We have the vice president. We have
Catherine Sebelius.
Sebelius, right. And so it's interesting to see where this is all falling right now and ultimately what this will mean, because problems still exist.
And don't forget, the president also took full responsibility, too. So we have lots of responsibility, no explanations, no plan for how they're going to fix it. It's really an appalling situation. I have a friend in Illinois who has been a huge Obama supporter from the beginning, and he confessed yesterday that this did it. Maybe he had to say Obama wasn't doing a great job. There is no explanation for this.
I thought the president's choice of words yesterday were interesting, because he said that, you know what, we'll just grind it out over the next few weeks. And I thought to myself, that seems like an odd choice of words, because...
I thought it was an effective speech yesterday. I think the big problem, it's not the first time that his administration has had this circumstance, is that not only did they not get out in front of it, but they haven't explained it very well. They did. They haven't.
How many people are signed?
Yeah,
that was the question.
But even before
no
that, I don't think they've explained the whole. Even before the first website crashed, they didn't explain what was in the law very well. There's
right.
confusion. Now this is a very big and confusing thing to do, and to overhaul the entire country's health care and involving millions and millions of people. But A, they should have been prepared for it, and B, they should have done a better job explaining it.
So why did you think the speech then was effective?
I thought it was a good speech. I thought he was in his campaign mode, and I think we'll all agree that he's very good at that. I thought he made some points. Now, I didn't fact check the points, but he talked about how Massachusetts had problems when it first came
right.
on board, and Massachusetts is only one state in the union, and here we are trying to get the entire country to turn over. He made some political points about how well or not well some of the states that are governed by Republicans are diving into this thing. At the very least, he gave a point of view and went on the attack. He had been sitting back taking punches for so long. I'd like to hear what he has to say. I thought the grind. What else can he say now other than we're going to grind it out, because it is the law, and I think the other point that he made and others have made is there have been laws in this country that were passed after much controversy, and then once they became law, people came together to try to make what might have been flawed law better law. And what we've seen in this highly charged political atmosphere are the Republican voices saying we need to undo this law and just get rid of it. And I don't know that that's productive at this point, because it is law.
I was thinking about this yesterday about approach when I was watching the president speak. When President Bush, George W. Bush, was in office for 8 years, would never admit to anything being wrong. It was very rare for him to say, this got screwed up, we didn't do this right, this didn't happen. He would always defend it to the nth degree. We know people like this in our workplace and in our lives, you know, who will just, it's just going to go. And it seems that this president says I'm sorry a lot. And I just think that's a different approach, and I don't know how it works with people of how you say, we screwed it up, I'm responsible, and you know, we'll do it. And this mea culpa has been now, you know, we're going into our third week of it.
I don't know. When I first went into management, you may have the same, Ira, a friend said, you have to learn how to say, I'm sorry, in many ways, sincerely or not. You have to express it in different tones, in different, volume. You have to learn to say that. And that's fine. But do not fail to see it as anything other than it is a technique. And you have to look. I'm not as smart as Obama. I'm not, you know, second guessing, although I do want to second guess him. This is his signature piece of legislation. He did a really piss poor job of selling it at the beginning, of pushing it through, of getting people to understand what it was about. And now that it gets passed, it's under attack. So why wasn't there a team of the best and the brightest in the country putting together a website that would work, a system that would not have the flaws that this one does?
Yeah, and ordinarily I would sympathize with a CEO and certainly the President of the United States when he says, I didn't know something was going on or something.
Right.
I mean, I'm running a tiny little newspaper in the Hudson Valley. At its peak, I had 150 or so employees. I'd like to think that I was on top of everything that was going on because I was responsible for everything. But I couldn't swear that there was something that was going on in one of the departments that the department head did not bring to me. So I can sympathize with that. But to your point, this was the signature event of his presidency. This is going to be his legacy.
Right.
And if there was anything ever in his administration where he should have made it clear to everybody in his building, I want to know everything that's going on here.
It was this.
You let me know. Nothing is too small. This was it. So it's disappointing.
And Ira, you know, there's something else. Don't forget, we just came out of the whole budget shutdown crisis. The Republicans wanted a delay in the system. He knew at this point. They knew that there were major problems with the website. Why wasn't that a negotiating point? He could have negotiated for more time and won points with the Republicans. I think it was the opposite. I think he was saying, no matter what, we're going to push it forward on time because they want us to do the opposite.
There was a great point made by John Stewart a couple nights ago, and I just John Stewart has been brilliant on this of really of just going after the administration on this. But the point he made, he kept on showing a tape about during both the first and second Obama campaigns of how brilliant he was in setting up his website for election.
That's a really great point.
You know, and it was, and he had it.
This is so much more huge than that.
Well,
he has a lot more talent now
More research. Well, the point was that you realized how important it was to have that in place and to have it working and to have it work to your advantage and to have all the emails coming out and communication and everything else. And all of the things that they the bit that Stewart did, I thought was good, was that for all of the points, for every point that they were saying that they on tape from 4 or 6 years ago, complimenting him on for what he did on the web.
Now
was
there
a negative,
are problems,
you know,
right.
problems right. of
well, there, you know, there's one other thing too.
Issues.
While I'm blasting Obama, let's really do it. He didn't know about Angela Merkel and other leaders' phones being tapped. Doesn't understand or doesn't know what's going on. What is it that he's doing? What priority does he have?
Well,
what
that's
does
why
he know
I go
about?
Back to. I can sort of relate to that because in a much smaller shop, it's possible. But there are certain. It's possible that you wouldn't know what's going on below you. But at there are certain levels of matters that need to be brought to his attention, and that he needs to be making clear if he is not. I mean, if he.
Oh yeah, he didn't know about the IRS either.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah.
Right.
So that's that. You get put off after a while.
Yeah, it's beginning to be a really old message and not convincing.
Well, and as you said a moment ago, Rosemary, and I think it's a great point about this is a technique.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just a method. Nice speech. Thanks. I like your I'm sorry, but how come the system's still messed up? You know, and I compare it to, do you know that what's happening with the AP down in Virginia?
Yes.
A reporter, a very senior reporter, made it was a horrible mistake, a real rookie mistake. And it was important, too, because it I won't go into the details, but it had an effect on the gubernatorial race down there. The AP rescinded the story less than 2 hours after it was put up. And then, in the after days, they fired the reporter, they fired the editor who edited the story, and they fired the regional editor who was in charge of both of them. And there's now a backlash about whether that's fair or not. But what heads have rolled here?
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Do you think that, for example, Kathleen Sebelius should be fired, even though she may not have been the one sitting at the console designing the website that has failed? I mean, I wonder about that.
It's on her watch.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we could go back to the UN ambassador who took she fell on her sword over in Benghazi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember that,
yeah.
Susan Rice? She got a promotion or a different job. What's going to happen to her? Again, it's just so transparent as a technique. If she's responsible, she needs to go. Now, the IRS officials were let go when it turned out that they were maybe targeting conservative groups.
I'm a little uncomfortable with it from this standpoint. There is when you're a manager of a baseball team and your team loses, you get fired. I mean, it's sort of the culture of sports.
Right.
I don't know whether that culture of sports necessarily should transfer to government or to business, unless you really have a reason to fire somebody, that a mistake, if it is in fact a single mistake, and maybe even if it's a big mistake, should that be enough to warrant somebody losing their job?
Well, also,
the answer is I don't know. It could be.
Yeah, you're raising
and
the question.
Let me just make this point, which is, when you look at this from outside of a government perspective and outside of a political perspective, if you have something that is going wrong, yes, it didn't work, and this person may not have had the best handle on it, but they're still the person in charge, and do you want to take them out of that environment until it gets worked out?
So pragmatically, you know, you got this massive problem, has to be solved. Is it more of a setback to bring somebody who is not up to
speed?
Right,
brand new, who's coming in.
That's a good question.
Instead of someone who's been with it from the beginning of setting it up.
I used to tell my managers when I would hire somebody, don't be afraid to make a mistake, but don't make the same mistake twice. And I don't know if Kathleen Sebelius, using her as the current whipping girl, should be fired, as giant a problem as this has been created. Is this the first black mark on her resume?
The AP. I'm sorry, the AP guy had been there for 28 years.
Well, we don't know.
Never
what
had
his,
an error.
Is that right? I don't know what his personnel file said.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. This is a huge political catastrophe for the administration. It was the number one job of her department, and she herself has described it as miserably frustrating. She's to blame.
But does it get worse for Obama if, in fact, he fires her? Politically speaking. Is it more of a I made a huge mistake in hiring her? Does it look worse politically for Obama and the Democrats if he lets her go? That's the question.
Perhaps. As a CEO, I would want somebody in there who could just fix it really fast.
Well, I think Obama would be in trouble if he was running for a third term.
Right. Oh, yeah, you think.
Yeah. But who are running, however.
Meanwhile, and we can continue this when we come back from break, but meanwhile, as of 7:33 this morning, if you logged on to the website, the message that you got is the system is down at the moment.
Jeez.
So that's where we are right now. We'll be back right after this short break.
Support comes from SUNY Ulster Online, introducing Fast Finish for adult learners with online accelerated courses for associate degrees in as fast as 17 months. SUNYUlster.edu/fastfinish. Catskill Hudson Bank, based in Kingston and specializing in commercial loans for local businesses and organizations. 12 branches in the Hudson Valley and Catskills, member FDIC, equal housing lender. CatskillHudsonBank.com. Albany Marriott, with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com. And Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area. RichardsFuel.com.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to our panel, our Halloween panel.
Ooh, skinny.
What are you dressed as?
Yeah. You know, it's radio. Whatever you want. Yeah. You can say you're dressed as whatever you want. We've been talking about, and we'll just finish up this topic before we move on to other stuff and after NPR news break. But one of the things that comes to mind when we talk about this issue, and I thought of this when you said, okay, well, then what is the president actually doing?
Yeah.
It's the website, as I said right before we went to break. It's still not working. As of the last toll here was $178 million that has been spent on this project. I mean that's pretty incredible when you think about it. So we mentioned earlier that the president has taken responsibility for this, and the vice president has taken responsibility for this. The vice president yesterday, I thought this was amusing, said he didn't even bother logging on to the Obamacare site. Actually, he said the president tried to get online and my daughter tried to get online. I did not because it was clear I wasn't going to get online. And the president said there's no excuse for it, and I take full responsibility for making sure it gets fixed ASAP. So the other part of this, of course, and I don't know, this goes into the blame game, but the early warning signs, you had alluded to this earlier, Rosemary, about when did officials know, when did they have the opportunity to make a deal, as you say, mm-hmm. and kind of work on this and say to the Republicans, okay, and use it as a negotiating tactic and say, all right, this is going to buy us a month or two, although I don't know whether that would have helped or not.
I'm not one of the journalists who have helped clog up the system by trying to by trying to get in and see if the system is working. So I may be oversimplifying this. If this is simply a volume issue, there is such a thing I think called bandwidth that should be able to fix it. It seems to me that the form itself, the you're basically saying, here's my name and address, here are the plans I have to choose from, here's the plan I'm interested in signing up. It seems it's a lot more complicated for me to buy a pair of shoes through Amazon, and that works perfectly. So why is it just simply volume that is? I mean, here I am undersimplifying this.
Well, I say the same thing, and then this is a simplification as well. I always say this about voting. I don't understand why you can be in the most remote part of the world and put in your debit card and take out, you know, to the dollar out of your bank account, and that can be figured out and traced perfectly, and yet we can't figure out how to cast votes in this country and have them accurately tallied. And the same comes in this, I think.
It just baffles me. And you presume that the smartest, the brightest people were involved with this. Maybe that's a presumption.
Yeah,
I
don't think it's anything simple that's wrong. I think this is a massive system. And we know, we've been around computers enough that whenever there's a system like this, there are major bugs. I think they are possibly downplaying the extent of the problems, which gives the impression, mm-hmm. oh, it's just a volume issue mm-hmm. or something like that. I think they may need months of repairs.
You know, it says the senior administration official says that the president gets a nightly readout with the latest Obamacare statistics and an update of the website's status.
Right.
Well, it seems that, you know, for the last couple nights, that would be, well, it's still not working.
but that said, when Medicare was unveiled, a complex plan, the most complex at the time, there was no such thing as an internet. That right. process was the old-fashioned way. Give me a piece of paper or a phone call.
Fill out the application.
Yeah,
right.
So what happened?
Well, then you could blame somebody other than a computer.
That's actually a really good question, Ira. How come we haven't gone to a backup manual?
Well, they do say you can still call up, you can still do that, but you know, and you can.
So, but they're going to have to use a computer system to get ultimately in. We're going to go to a break. We're going to get the latest from NPR News, talk about this and other topics, and then we'll come back with all kinds of good stuff right after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel, the Halloween edition. I'm Joe Donahue. Ray Graff is here. Ira Fussfeld and Rosemary Armeo. And we are, I think everyone's in fine form this morning. We're having a good time and talking about a wide range of issues. Let us talk about the shutdown. Rosemary talked about this earlier about, you know, some of the things that we've been dealing with recently. And there was a New York Times article today about how The shutdown is inspiring many Democrats to run for House seats because they feel that they really can win. And they use Nebraska as one example. They've not elected a Democrat to the House of Representatives since 1994. And until this month, prospects for changing that were dim at best. Of the state's three House seats, a Democrat has a fighting chance only in the district encompassing Omaha and its suburbs, and the party's sole hope there. Omaha's popular city council president had declared that he was not going to run. But then suddenly the council president has jumped into the 2014 race against an eight-term incumbent Republican. There's a lawyer from Lincoln, Nebraska, who has declared his candidacy. So suddenly people are seeing this as, I can run as the Democrat. I can run as the anti-Republican, the anti-Ted Cruz, and make a splash in regions where Republicans have had a stronghold for a long time.
Don't you think that there are two factors that are going to have sway here? One is if in February, when these campaigns start really gearing up, we're still saying that the website for healthcare is down.
Right.
And all of
or
a sudden,
there's a new shutdown.
And that was the second point, because we're
I mean, ultimately, it's time, right? I mean, it's like,
well,
it looks
a lot can happen.
Now.
Yeah. I mean, so much can happen between today and tomorrow. But you've got these two, you know, many people are sour on the Republican brand as a result of the shutdown. Well, now many people are sour on the Democratic brand because of the healthcare screw-ups. And we're going to see what happens with the next shutdown deadline and the debt ceiling deadline. And if it's a replay, then Republicans are going to dig a deeper hole for themselves. But if miraculously government learned from the first time and comes together, then I think we're back on a level playing field.
And let us not underestimate the short attention span of the American
Absolutely.
Public.
This, Absolutely.
We're hot about this now. In February is when the elections start. But you're more than a year away from the next election where there could be an
effect. And not only the short attention span, but forgive me the ignorance of many Americans who may not even know the name of their own congressman.
I have to concur with that. Yeah.
But there's always, I mean, we've been doing this, especially when it comes to the budget and it becomes the shutdown. I mean, we've been kicking this can down the road for years now. So we've gone through election cycles, and there have been, in some places there have been consequences, in other places there haven't. But I mean, you say attention span, but it just seems like these issues don't really go away. You know, we had a point where there would be like this crisis, and then it would ebb, and then okay, you have this crisis. Well, I mean, look at healthcare. This has been a contentious issue now for years. The budget has been a contentious issue for years. Immigration has been a contentious issue for years. I wonder at what point it doesn't all just sort of mash together.
Don't most surveys show that most Americans don't really pay attention to the election until 2 or 3 weeks before the election, if then.
At that point
in time that they start thinking about it, they'll take stock of where they are personally and where they think the country is at that snapshot of a moment. And again, so much can happen, and memories are so short that to say something now is going to impact a year from November is
right.
Foolish, I think.
Well, I think everything Ira says is true. I don't see that we, you know,
I think
really
everything Ira says is true, too.
Always.
Almost always says. But I don't, you know, I don't really.
Did you hear that the Cardinals won the World Series?
I heard that. I don't foresee like this big change in government. However, I do have to be a little bit of a Pollyanna here and say if the shutdown is encouraging people who are not going to run, which might encourage better campaigning and better campaign debate, that is a good thing.
I agree with you. Although the one thing I have to say, I agree with you entirely because it's good. I mean, it's good for democracy and it's good for people who weren't going to run that they have contested races. And I think that's fantastic.
Yep.
I do. The one thing that scares me, of course, is that the negative campaigning and the whole tenor of politics, because now you have these Democrats and even Republicans who are entering the race on one issue, and they are gathering all of this tape of their opponent that you know is going to be used, as Ira said, in that last 2 weeks while people are making up their mind.
I at least think that it's good that the issue is running the government and how to negotiate for what you want rather than gay marriage or abortion or one of the social issues that really government shouldn't be involved in at all.
Here again, it's early.
But yeah, you know, it's one of the sad things about how this Obama administration is evolving and how the issues that are currently going on are hurting his brand, because here was a transformative politician and a transformative president,
right,
who was going to do big things. And he was going to do big things in the face of the most divisive media environment that I think any president has ever faced. And had he been able to navigate those waters relatively smoothly and not add more fire to the negative people, maybe this country would have gone to a place where he wanted it to go and many of us wanted to go. And now what's happening is, again, going back to the healthcare and the spying and the IRS and Republicans or the extremists would say Benghazi. I mean, any number of things. That aura is not going to carry into the next election. And so that's sad because I do think the divisiveness is not going to go away.
Just one question. A divisive media environment, what is that?
Well,
you
I think
see
the
media
media
rather than
no,
a
no,
divisive
I,
the, political environment.
No, I think the divisive media is represented by cable and talk radio where you have the one side and the other side. After the Obama speech yesterday in Boston, I watched it on CNN, and then right after the speech, they immediately go to a couple of analysts, and they made some points. They were not in love with the speech, but they were not haters of the speech. They had some legitimate points that they made about how Obama tried to nuance what he had once said about nobody's going to lose their health care, and now what he's saying about that. And then I flipped over to Fox, as I felt it was my duty to do.
Yeah.
And there was Neil Cavuto, and I can't remember who he had on. But the thrust of their discussion was not the constructive criticism or analysis, but how there's another example of this guy. It was just the whole right-wing
the rant.
And so people who watch that channel, who are already inclined to believe that, their view is reinforced. If you watched MSNBC, which I didn't in this particular case, I suspect it was the other way, and Fox was in the middle. So you've got these
CNN
prongs.
Was in the middle.
CNN was in the middle,
right.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah.
Carol writes that Obamacare may be bad enough that it is going to lead to Republican gains in next year's elections. The Democrats have lost a lot of support over it already because they did not fight to include any kind of public option and just fed the insurance companies more customers with only a few new rules that actually help people. It's also so complicated that the average person can't begin to negotiate it, even if they can access it. That's one reason the website doesn't work. It's too damn complicated. One thing to ask is, who benefits from the complicatedness of the system?
Good letter,
and, Carol. And on Fox, the Cavuto was with Dr. Ben Carson, who is somewhat of an extreme commentator, and he was, and also on was Scott Brown, the former senator from Massachusetts.
Oh, yes.
And what did Scott Brown say about Obama? How dare he come to Boston on the day of the final game of the World Series, and look what that's going to do to traffic. I mean, it was just, come on.
Let's talk about the World Series.
Ooh,
Game 6 took place last night. Look, I think I will say I'm a Red Sox fan. I was rooting for the Red Sox. I like the team. So I was happy to see this. But I think looking at this in a journalistic perspective, and only for a second, that is – When you have a storyline like this, where you have a team that goes from last to winning the World Series, to having that moment in a year in a city where there was great tragedy, to come around and for the first time since 1918 be able to celebrate a victory at Fenway Park in Boston, it seems to me like a cool story.
May I give a personal context to this story?
Absolutely.
First of all, I hope the first thing that the Red Sox players do after the parade on Saturday is go to a barber.
Actually, the discussion last night was, would this happen before the parade?
Yeah.
No.
And because they were doing a lot of it for charity and hopefully to make millions of dollars for various charities as a result.
Yeah,
so.
I think it's the persona now. And I think fans would be disappointed as the floats go through Boston if they don't see the beard. Listen, I was born and raised in the Bronx. I went to my first game at Yankee Stadium almost 60 years ago. I was a sports writer and covered playoffs and World Series at Yankee Stadium. I've been to spring training. So you'll excuse me if I'm not real excited about Boston winning the World Series. But I will tell you, yes, I love the city of Boston. And to the extent that this helps buoy that city from where it was at the beginning of the season with the bombing. That's great. And the other thing I like about it from a sports perspective is that, again, showing my age, I hate playoffs. I just don't like the fact that a team can be the best team in its league throughout the entire season, a long schedule, and then perhaps get knocked off in one or two games in the playoffs. Boston had the best record in the American League. St. Louis was the best team in the National League. The best team won the World Series based on wins and losses. And so from that standpoint, I'm pleased that Boston won, because I hate it when the wild card team wins the World Series or any other playoff. I mean, there are people in this building who are wearing Red Sox hats and sweatshirts, and I just think it's terrible.
They do that every day.
It's and you have a team that there was such a changeover. They had a miserable season last year. Bobby Valentine became the devil.
No one's stock has fallen more than Bobby Valentine last a year ago in a World Series without him.
And so here we are, and there's a lot of stories from this, and of course it's great for the city of Boston. It'll be wonderful. I was just thinking about what you said, Ira, about the parade. I remember when the Phillies won the World Series in 1980, and I begged my parents to go down and see the parade, and went down to see the parade, and we went to the floats, and we were there on Broad Street, and I didn't know who any of the guys were. Like, they all, they're out of the uniforms, they don't have the numbers on them, you don't know who they are. They're all like, they got winter coats on and hats, and then it was like, "Who's that? Was that Pete Rose? Is that like Steve Carlton?"
It's like Kramer as a seat filler. They didn't know. Right? They just, anybody could go by.
And they were like taking pictures. I didn't know who anybody was.
I do love the spirit and the angst also that goes into this. The agony of defeat and the joy of victory that goes into this. It makes my mother, who is 88 and has never followed sports of any kind, she told me that she'd like to pick a team to root for. Who do we think it should be?
New York Giants.
New York Giants, you think? Okay.
That'll give her plenty of
We told her the Mets. That would get the same idea.
Mets are a lost cause. How old is she?
She's going to be 88 this month.
May not make a World Series.
It's, I don't know. Again, going back to what Ira said and how I started off this, I think it's, it's nice for the city. It's both teams have had a good luck with World Series recently. So if this is how it turns out, it seems to be a very nice story. Mm-hmm. Get ready to open up the skylights, because I'm going to drop this name. But last night, I'm in a bar in Massachusetts, and I'm watching the game with John Irving.
Mm. Oh, wow. How about that?
That's not awesome. Dr. J either.
No. Yeah, no. And
who was he rooting for?
But Red Sox.
Of course.
Yeah. And it was with Ian, our news director.
I was watching the game, and it's 6-0, and the Cardinals made their one and only run, and it looked like they were going to have a big inning.
They filled up the bases.
Thinking there has got to be 38,000 people in that ballpark and millions of people in bars who know the Red Sox history of failure or of letting us down at the last minute, who had their hearts in their throats at that point.
Well, we were actually talking about that, because they kept on showing the view of the crowd outside the field, and they had them kind of stanchioned off on right. Hockey way and all that. When all of that was happening, even people were thinking about, well, do we leave? Because, it seems like it's in the bag. You have to see it through, because you just don't know. But they were showing the crowd standing up, and the look on their face just seemed like, fear. There's certainly not cocky.
There was a history.
Yeah, a long, long history that isn't going to go
it was
over.
It was almost to the day of the Bill Buckner era in Game 6 in 86.
That was the story. That was the story, because John Irving was at this event for the Williamstown Film Festival. He was at the kickoff event. And I interviewed him last week, and at the very end of the interview, he said, I hate this, because I said yes to this, not realizing it was going to be Game 6 of the World Series. And I don't feel good about that. And last night, he said the reason he was telling us is that the reason that he hated this so much was because the last time that he missed the Red Sox in the World Series was in '86. He was in Toronto, He couldn't get the game. And he finally, he was doing this book event. He finally got out. He found a hotel that had the game on. He went in and it was just as the Buckner play happened. And he was like, I'm never missing this again.
So we have, they have, the team has John Irving to thank for this.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. Absolutely.
Well, I learned something, for all of the nonsense over the years about the curse of the Bambino, I did not realize until last night that Babe Ruth played in that championship in 1918 as a defensive replacement. That's how he got into the game. He was playing the, because he was pitching then too, but somehow they put him in the outfield as a defensive replacement.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Halloween on our panel. And we'll. As Ray scowls.
No.
That was a scowl, my friend.
Are you
getting ready for your costume? I don't know which. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from Indian Mountain School, Lakeville, Connecticut, an independent coeducational junior boarding and day school for students from pre-kindergarten through grade 9. IndianMountain.org. Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York. Specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. JoyellesJewelers.com. And Kenco Work and Play Outfitters, Route 28, Kingston. Saturday, November 2nd, a day of women's sports and outdoors activities with wine and cheese tastings, yoga classes, and more. ATKenco.com.
Welcome to the Halloween edition of the Roundtable Panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Ray Graff. Coming up just after BBC News, we will hear about the history of candy in this country.
Oh.
Well, hard-hit.
With samples?
Hard-hitting piece, yes, on the history of candy. And Halloween candy is included in that.
There's none in my house anymore. Mom went out and bought it last week, and that's was a mistake.
It's gone.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Yep. We live in a place, we're in the middle of nowhere, so we don't have that problem of kids coming. So it's anybody even coming to bother the house.
Right.
There's just nobody there, but that's fine. I saw this article in the Washington Post, and it struck me because about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, my sister-in-law called me up and she said, "I know you're down in Albany, and we need a costume for my niece, her daughter, and would you mind picking it up?" And I said, "Sure, no problem." And I went over to one of these party places, and they have like a numbered system where you go to pick up the costume, and there's just like a wall, and it has the pictures, and it'll say 378. Sexy pirate, and then you go up and you take a little piece of paper and you say, "I need 378 sexy pirate medium."
Do they have that in their size?
Right. So and that's what you do. My wife and I were waiting for the costume to come out. We're looking at the wall, and Kelly turns to me and she said, "Is it just me, or is every one of these really slutty?"
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's a fairly good point. There's an article in the Washington Post, Petula Dvorak writes this article about how this is her line: "The models in the Halloween costume catalogs this year show more flesh than the women of Victoria's Secret."
Oh boy.
She talks about that everything has the word sexy in it. There is the sexy pizza costume, the sexy watermelon costume, minus one strategically placed bite. Then there's the sexy hamburger costume. There's the Miley Cyrus sexy teddy bear costume, the onesie. $7 billion will be spent on Halloween in America. And one of the things is the fact that this has become a... The type of costumes have become quite provocative.
It's become an adult affair.
Adult affair, but even, I think, you look at it 2 years ago, I think, yes, it was an adult affair, but now those costumes are now transitioning down so that kids are wearing those costumes, the same costumes as well, and it's weird.
Oof.
Well, if I were to wear a costume, and I believe it would look ridiculous on me no matter what I wore, but I think this year I would come dressed as a computer with the Obamacare screen on it.
Oh, brilliant.
Currently out of
order. Ira, way to go.
I like that.
Yeah. That I you know, I've seen sexy hamburgers before, but sure. It had nothing to do with Halloween. I particularly like the ones at Five Guys, but that's just me. You know?
Yeah.
As we were saying off air, I'm sorry, I'm a party pooper. Halloween is not my favorite day of the year. I just I never participated as a kid, and maybe it was because of my circumstances at the time, and I've been permanently scarred. I took my kids around, but I just have something against the concept of kids knocking on the door threatening you if you don't give them something sweet or some pennies or something. And
I loved Halloween. I grew up in Colony, and I associated with catwalking around with friends with a whole pillowcase that we used, getting full-size candy bar. If we want to talk about a threat to Halloween, it was the fun-size candy bar that ruined it, not sexy costumes. and the sound of rustling dry leaves, it was wonderful. And I think that's been lost for a long time. People are afraid to let their kids out at night. There's the whole scandal with needles and razors being put into candy.
Which I think is largely myth.
Yeah, I do. But you know, you still have to worry about it. I used to take bites out of a lot of candy of my kids.
Oh, really?
I'm
protecting you.
Are you a good parent? Yeah. Mother of the year.
And I think it is way past the time. We kids don't go out to playgrounds. They don't play anymore. We have to have buildings in malls where we take our children for entertainment.
Depends on where you live, though.
Even around here, it's true, and this is pretty safe. So, I don't know. My favorite Halloween story was when my now oldest son wanted to be a shark. This was when the Jaws movies was coming out, and his father, incredibly creative, made this big paper mache and cardboard structure, and he put it over his head, and it was amazing. It looked like a shark coming out of the water. My son has it on. He's looking at himself in the mirror, and he turns to his father and says, "Shark don't have feet." So maybe we've never been satisfied with the costumes.
And with that remark, shark don't have feet, we end our panel discussion this morning. Rosemary, Ira, Ray, thank you very much.
Rick, where could you get political commentary like that except right here on this program?
Absolutely. Absolutely. WAMC.org if you would like to start the lockbox.
That'd be a good Halloween costume. I want to be the lockbox.
Or a sexy pirate.
Sexy pizza.
So many jokes, so little time. We'll be back and talk about candy after this news break.